CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It's just after 7 o'clock. CliffCentral.com. We are live from various locations, from Bulelo in the studio, to me in my study, to Gord. Gord, what room are you in your house? No, you gotta unmute yourself there, dude.
I'm not even
there.
We go.
You're on.
I'm in my open plan lounge, come kitchen, come entrance hall.
Beautiful.
The house.
Beautiful. Sia Sangweni is also in his apartment, which will be vacant, and you can go and squat there if you'd like to from tomorrow. Sia will be moving to Durban from today.
Not like the killer at my door, thank you very much.
So, Gordo, how are you doing? Because you've actually been riding out the storm a little bit longer than most people.
I'm 10 days in. This is old hat for me. I've already forgotten what human contact is like, and quite frankly, I don't think I need it in my life anymore.
You say that, but you're actually quite a sociable person, and I've been looking at your social media posts. I know you're taking a bit of a break from social media, too. You wrote a great article on how actually less is more when it comes to social media. But how are you holding up, having had more experience of this than the rest of us so far?
I had to leave the house quite a few times, more times than I'd like. Every time I go to the shops or to the pharmacy, which I had to do once, I'm like hyper aware of touching my face, touching myself in public, touching my face and, touching things other people have touched, and also just how flippant and kind of full of shit most people are, in that they're behaving either exactly as if nothing's going on or kind of defiantly not following protocol. But I have been mostly at home. And also, and as far as social media, in that article that I wrote, which is on my website, if anyone wants to check it out, called Why Social Media Might Be the Last Thing You Need Right Now, I pointed out that I've never wanted to participate on social media more, because you feel like it's your window into the world and you kind of need it. And yet people have never been more miserable, nor has social media been more depressing ever in my 13 years on Facebook. So I am on there. I'm just trying very hard to sort of unfollow or snooze the people who don't shut up about Corona.
Mm. Yeah. What has been making you so unsettled about it? Why do you say it's the worst of all the times in 13 years you've been on Facebook?
First of all, you can fully understand Corona being the topic, because it is the biggest thing to happen in a generation. And I'm not begrudging people wanting to mention it. I was looking at my own feed and I looked at about 80% of what I was posting was to do with Corona. And I was like, this actually has to stop, because it's the same thing over and over and over and again. It's all anyone wants to talk about. And you've got hysteria, and you've got fake news, and you've got scientific illiteracy. Like, the best example is my buddy Braden. Braden is the nicest kid in the whole world. I know him from my Man United supporters club. He's about 24, 25, insanely talented young guy, and he's in a panic. And he means well, but every post, at least, is some hysterical, we have to act now. If you don't do this, the curve will look like this. He has a, oh my God, it's Carl! Hello, Carl!
You're attention. Totally left, God.
Nothing else matters of what we were talking about before.
I thought I'd just bring Carl up. Okay, you were telling us about your friend Braden, who's panicking and making everybody else panicked.
He's one person. He means well. He thinks that if he keeps instructing his friends, people like my cousin, bless her, is also in a bit of a panic. And she literally wrote a thing that started with, we call upon the United States of America to lift sanctions against Iran. And I was like, who the fuck's we? I was like, cuz, I love you and everything, but like...
We call upon the United States.
Yeah. And it's like, but people fully believe that when they tell social media something, that they're talking to the whole world and not just their 147 insignificants that are like their family, friends, and a couple of people from work. Like, so, and also, dude, forwarding of memes. Like, I'm not a snowflake. I don't get offended by a Corona meme, and I myself have shared the occasional one that I thought was very clever or very funny. Mm. Some of them are offensive or just stupid or really just mean-spirited, but most of them just aren't funny. And everybody thinks that when they receive one from Ryan from HR, who they hardly know,
yeah,
or a voice note of, okay, I've got it on good authority from the highest ranking white Turk in the ANC.
I hate those so much.
I got that voice note the day that everything was announced. I got that voice note, and when my friend first sent it to me, I said, how many times are you then coming to get this in the next hour? He said 5. I said 10. The answer was 9. I got it 9 times. Yeah. A woman that I've met once, who's a junior minion at a company I worked for once in October, forwarded me the government, the government of the army regulations that are going to come into place. It's like, you're not Reuters. Do you really think every piece of information you get on Corona is so important that people you hardly know won't live if you don't share it? And also, do you really think that people probably haven't received it yet or aren't going to?
Yeah.
So my kind of thing with social media was like, look, if you think you're onto a really big piece of news, and if you think you're onto like something that's important for your friends to know, or if in the case of the Mortal Kombat meme, which was the funniest thing so far to happen in Corona memes, that it makes you literally audibly laugh out loud with your mouth.
That, what was it?
It was just a thing saying, it was like a Mortal Kombat logo, and it said, due to coronavirus, Shao Kahn has postponed the 500th annual tournament to Art World. Like, the Mortal Kombat tournament has been postponed for the well-being of the combatants. Shao Kahn issued a statement saying that he would looks forward to the fight for Earthrealm next year. And yeah, it was very funny. But the point is, like, when it's a 9.75 out of 10 funny, or you genuinely think people you care about won't find out this news at all if you don't send it, don't send it. But you get the same thing over and over.
Yeah, this is what I started saying just before you came on. It's so irresponsible, and you are not a news network. And I know it comes from a good place. Most people are doing it because they want to be helpful and useful to their relatives and their friends and family. And I get that. It comes from care. But my God, you don't have, you're an amateur news person. You're not a professional. And even the professional news get it wrong so much of the time.
I just also like, imagine with WhatsApp, you've got that 5-person forwarding limit.
Yeah.
And I've got a little system to forward to more than 5 people. I just imagine these people going like, every time something comes in, this needs to go to 60 people. Like, share it with the specific individuals you think will find it funny.
Well, I hate to.
I mean, imagine.
I hate to climb on board with this because I know my problem is not really a problem, but I'm on a couple of groups, and then what happens is that the groups all send you the same stuff, so you end up with like 20 of the same goddamn meme, all landing on your phone, and like every night when I get into bed, I spend easily 45 minutes just clearing out like repeat shit from my inbox that is just clogging up my photo library. I mean, genuinely, like 200 pictures a day that just can be deleted because they're all the same thing.
Get it.
But what I found, though, like I've spoken to you about this before, is that I've been having a real problem, and you know, it's not even a joke. I've been having an issue with misanthropy, and I've been trying to sort of cheer myself up and race again. This has done not a lot to help it. But what I did find, wrote that article, as I said, it starts with me. I'm not like telling the whole world how to act because I'm perfect. Mm-hmm. I noticed that for a couple of days, about 3/4 of my feed of what I'd posted had been Corona related. And I still will post something if it's interesting or useful Corona related just about every day. Because as I said, it is the thing of our generation. So, but when I noticed that ratio was so high, I now try and reverse it. I try to post 3 or 4 cheerful, non-Corona related things consciously, stuff that's interesting. But I also decided to put out a bit of a call, I think it was the day before yesterday, saying that like, now that this thing's official, I'm going to be video calling you all hard. And yesterday was such a nice day, man. I publishing guy from the UK with a bunch of great advice about getting these books done. I had like 3 long conversations with real friends who like, there's something to a video call if you close all your other windows and whatever, that it's a really kind of focused conversation.
Well, this is what I was doing. There's a brilliant app which I see more and more of my friends are hopping on because you can actually see who's already on the app. It's called houseparty.com. If you go to houseparty.com.
I was on it yesterday.
It is so good.
Good one, dude.
So I got my whole family on board, and I took a screenshot of all. There were 6 of us on this one call, which was hilarious.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's especially for people who are separated from their families or really good friends that you miss. It's a great thing to do. So you can get on here. I think you can get up to like 10 or 20 people on a call. It gets very noisy and messy, but it's nice to see people, to see where they are in their houses, to kind of connect with them about what they're doing for dinner, you know, little things like that. And you do have meaningful interactions with people. As you say, Gord, you don't have any of the other stuff going on around you to clutter.
Facebook's not the best thing for it. And I mean, again, I did say it might be the worst thing for us right now. But I mean, if you're suffering with social separation anxiety, like corona anxiety, in the sense that you're worried about how things are going to turn out, you know, a great deal of suffering and that kind of thing that's going to happen in the world. Sitting on Facebook and reading the worst of that.
Yeah, that's going to make it depressed instantly.
Absolutely.
And you know, we had Dr. D on last week when we were still in studio, and she was terrific. So if you want to listen to her.
Which day was that, GC?
I think it was Friday last week that we had her on, and she was really sensible. You know, she's got this very calming way of talking. So when you listen to Dr. D, you instantly feel much more relaxed. And she makes a lot of sense. She's got years of clinical practice in under her belt. She's talking all over the world, or used to before Corona, at conferences about serious psychological issues. So it was great to have her on, and we'll probably have her on again on Skype. You know, the nice thing about this now, and I've got a few great suggestions from some of our listeners about people they want me to interview, like Ayan Hirsi Ali was one of the suggestions that came in this morning. I'll be talking to a different person basically every day, and we'll record those and then put them on the lineup. So there's something fresh for you to listen to every day. A few messages for you, Gord. First of all, Gord, someone says here, they absolutely love it. It's great when you're on. It makes my day. Thank you so much, Gordo. Isn't that nice?
Whoever that is, I love you
too,
man.
Candace says, it's so great to hear you. Such a treat of a human to cheer us up.
Candace has been selectively, she's missed the ones where I'm a total dick, but thanks, Candace.
Gareth, please change your WhatsApp settings so it doesn't automatically download every image you get on WhatsApp. Yeah, I've tried that too, but then if there is one that is good,
you've got to see it to know what it is.
You've
got to taste it to know if it's the turd flavored jelly bean. You know what I mean? That's how the many flavored jelly beans work.
Right.
Wow, that is a quote on the back of a sugar sachet.
Here's a suggestion, and I'm afraid it's not going to happen, Ruth, but she says, I would love a second live show once a week in the afternoon. Just a suggestion.
I would as well, actually, Ruth, but, you know, it's Gareth's party. We all just guests.
no, not really. I thought about that, but it's just, it's too much to try and do that plus all the recorded interviews. And I don't want to end up in a situation that we were in, 3 years ago at Cliff Central, where I was doing 3 hours a day, every day for 5 days a week. And then we had, you know, 40 other shows that were putting out content. It's just too much. People can't keep up.
Plus, you're doing Blind History, which is epic.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
You got that going on as well.
Yeah. Did you hear the Idi Amin episode yesterday?
Yeah, I saw the little teaser for it, and I've been meaning to get around to it. And it's funny because I've gone from kind of bored shit. Look, I've made a point of keeping myself busy, and there's been one or two days. My friend Cherie put it brilliantly. Mm-hmm. When you not being busy, and you know work is quiet, existent at the moment, and you're not getting through your to-do list, when you actually take some time to just chill out, you feel like there's a test coming up and you're not studying for it. Mm-hmm. That's the best explanation of the feeling that I've heard so far.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's an exam coming and I should be studying for it. But I've been on my website, I've been writing poems and stories. I've been working on on this book publishing thing, which I've got a really interesting model for doing now. So I'm very excited about that. British publisher was more interested in my illustrations than my writing. I was like,
wow.
That's not what I came to talk about. But,
that's so good.
Yeah, it is good. It was kind of unexpected, but it was cool. So I am busy, but I did find that once I got onto this video calling mission, I actually found myself really busy yesterday and playing guitar. I've been playing bass. I've been really trying to reconnect with those things that I always say, I wish I had more time to do this.
Yeah.
And then you do get a Sunday to chill, and you've been so busy all week that the last thing you want to do is spend this rare day off like doing busy work.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to get to the back of this, having said, like, look, I never did any of those things and still be living my life, always going, oh, if only I could write my stories, if only I could draw my cartoons. So I'm drawing cartoons, updating my website with old work and stuff, putting new stuff on there, trying to relearn how to play bass. And Yeah, it's and trying to catch up with friends via like face-to-face video calls. And
a great thing I heard someone say over, you know, these days of having to stay indoors and the lockdown coming in, gorgeous, took his shirt off. Anyway,
I as can we ride move on.
a great thing I heard someone say is now you can actually stay put and not feel guilty about it. Whether you're an introvert or extrovert, there's so often you want to relax and you want some downtime, but you always feel like you're on the hamster wheel. Like, okay, no, I should be doing something. I should be out and about. I should be contacting someone.
Another thing I'm going to add to my list of things that I'm doing regularly, I'm routinely doing, is I'm going to have an afternoon siesta like the Spanish do. And I'm going to enforce it. Every day at 3 o'clock, I'm having a doo-doos. And don't try to get hold of me. I'm out.
Oh, dude. I actually have an interesting... I came out of sync with the space-time continuum, the result of a bit of a doo-doos. The day before, and I'm still reeling from it. Like, I still don't know whether I'm coming or going. So the day before yesterday, I just inexplicably woke up about an hour and a half before my alarm. I woke up at about 6, and I was, like, awake. I did a, you know, I, like, got up. Eventually, I was like, okay, well, I wake up needing coffee. That's kind of my vibe. I always really want coffee when I wake up.
But you didn't know what time it was or anything.
No, it was, like, 6 a.m., so I went and had a bit of a wee, and I got up, and I was like, okay, I feel very awake now, and I sort of lay down for 5 minutes and thought, okay, I'm awake, so let me make coffee. So I had coffee. Now it's like 6:30, 6:45, and I think, okay, let me get back into my audiobook, because I'm clapping. I always clap audiobooks at a pretty impressive, well, not impressive, wrong word, a pretty steady and significant rate. And I'm listening to Stephen King's The Dead Zone, what a book. And blinked 3 times and woke up, and it was 3:45. And I'm now totally I don't know whether I've traveled backward in time or forward in time, but I'm up till 2-3 in the morning. Then I'm trying to get up at 8 and sleeping till 11. And I just, like, this early morning wake up to do the show hopefully is going to help to reset me.
Yeah. And Bulelo, are you sleeping properly? I mean, do you have like a regular, are you very disciplined about when you go to bed?
I'll be in bed by 8 o'clock every single day. Keep it the same.
You go to sleep at 8 o'clock?
Well, I try and be in bed, start winding down. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean ideally by 9 you're asleep.
Yeah. Oh, well, that explains.
What time do you get up?
That explains why you got so much energy.
3 a.m. Get up at 3 a.m., go to sleep at 8, so 8 p.m.
You're basically like nocturnal, whereas most people are diurnal. You like you live in the night. You go to sleep while it's still day and wake up in the night. You burrow.
Do you know there's a word for that? Crepuscular.
Ooh. Is that if you sort of live a little bit in between diurnal and nocturnal?
Yeah, like there's some animals that are crepuscular, that they're somewhat, he's up at early before dawn, and
middle of the night.
Right.
Goes to sleep in the kind of evening.
Yes, correct.
So like birds. Birds that were created in order to make fun of ravers. Like 4 a.m. cyclists and certain species of bird only exist to mock. Like, because we're out of sync with nature, right? People are always like, oh, the tribal people that are uncontacted in South America live in such harmony with nature. I'm like, they have 12 kids and 9 of them die before they get hair on their balls. They live till they're 30. They have the most miserable existence ever. Stop romanticizing, you know, like non-scientific communities. But like, they do live very much in sync. And as it starts to get dark, their brain release, your brain's meant to release a whole lot of melatonin. So like, God made certain birds to stop you from raving. You know, when you hear the if you are up when the rave birds begin their mocking chant, it is a life of sin. And now we're just like, oh, birds.
Wow, that is.
Birds wake up at 4 a.m. only to make sure you're not raving.
That's unbelievable. Oh, my God. Rave birds. Okay, so good.
Only because it's cold and not because I'm giving up on this cause of naked broadcasting.
Yeah, you are definitely people who likes taking your shirt off if you can. I mean, I don't like shoes if I'm in the house. I don't wear shoes around the house. I know that for some people that's gross. You what?
Outside, I can't stand shoes if I'm outside. I hate having dirty feet.
Yeah, if I'm outside, I have to wear shoes because of the dirty feet. But that's a whole separate story.
No, I can't bear it. It's true when you rub your toe together.
All right, Gord's putting on his
outfit. You are in the middle of an outfit change.
I'm cold. I was making a point with the no shirt, but now I'm cold. I'm better.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sorry for anybody. We'll put a screenshot of that on the internet for everybody to see what we're dealing with.
You'll break the internet like Kim Kardashian got her tits out. That's what'll happen. Hope your servers are being maintained at the office, Gary.
All right.
That kind of traffic will break the NY.
What else is going on in the news, Sia? There's some stuff you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, well, we heard of the news of Saul Kersner's passing over the weekend,
yeah.
But in the midst of so much that's happening, we forgot to give an update yesterday.
Now,
but
I just want to talk about this for a second, if you don't mind, because I saw that there were rumors going around that he had died. And what really upset me about that is that Saul Kersner was not dead yet at the time that people were already saying he was dead, which was extremely hurtful to his family. Yeah, and I just don't understand how people find, you know, again, it's like being the news person who spreads around the coronavirus fake news. People just want to be first. And I'm afraid being first is often hugely detrimental, not just to your reputation, because you're in such a hurry to be known to be the first person to do something, but also to everyone around you, and very often the people whose lives are impacted immediately by this dumb stuff of you having to be important. And when he did die, it made me think about what Saul Kersner had done for South Africa. We've spoken a lot about people who, when they die, have made a contribution. Saul Kersner was such a visionary. You know, people talk about Sun City, they talk about Atlantis in Dubai, they talk about the resorts all over the world that man masterminded. Let's just remember, he started off with nothing. Saul Kersner famously was not really one of the most academic or well-educated people in South African history. He came from a very ordinary family. He had an idea, he had a dream. He started off with the Beverly Hills in Umhlanga, right?
That's still a gem.
How do you raise capital to build a hotel or to renovate an existing hotel when you start with nothing?
Well, this is the point.
To succeed in that game, if you've got the seed capital.
I just love the story of Saul Kersner, because everybody who says, well, you can't get ahead unless you have rich parents, or unless you've been to an Ivy League college in America, or if you didn't get the best high school education, or you didn't have friends in high places. Saul had none of that stuff, and he still made it. And God Almighty, did he make it. I mean, Sun City is entirely his imagination. Everything about Sun City, and I know that we're all used to it, and Sun City might not be the place that it once was.
Dude, as a kid, Sun City was fucking Shangri-La.
Absolutely.
Like, my parents could go and gamble and get utterly boozed, you extra for leaving you to wander around on your own. Like, I mean, that was a place that facilitated shit parenting like no other. You could literally just like tell the kids, look, check in with us once in the morning, we'll give you another 50 rand note, which was like winning the lottery every day. You go and buy those like little gold tokens and jewel the video games. They had video games no one else had.
Yeah.
And you could wander around forever and like never see the same thing, because you get lost in the casino area with the video games and that. You like the best ever. You'd get so hyped up, and then you'd eat the junk food either at the restaurants or from room service. It was the ultimate jewel. And then they did the Valley of the Waves, and you'd go up on those tubes and just do it over and over and get sunburned. It was the absolute most fun ever.
Well, you think about the palace. I mean, look, Sun City, the original hotel, was something extraordinary to start with. I mean, first of all, gambling was a big deal, because we couldn't gamble in South Africa before 1994, unless you were in...
Because it was in Bophuthatswana.
That's right. It was in Bophuthatswana. And because of a loophole, this is how brilliant the guy was, because of a loophole in South African law, and the fact that the then Bantustans had their own rules, he negotiated with Lucas Mangope to create this place in the middle of like a crater in the Pilansberg, which is what it is. It's an ancient meteorite site, believe it or not.
Pretty cool, actually.
Millions of years ago. And he created a paradise, a Las Vegas of South Africa, in the middle of this nowhere, which was just close enough to Joburg for people to get in the car and go for the day or spend the weekend.
Bit of a fast flip, I always thought, but like my memories of it are of childhood road tripping where it always seems like infinitely far. What's it about two and a half hours from Joburg?
It's three. About 2 hours, yeah. And again, we think about the Sun City Hotel, then the Cascades came, and that was a game changer. Then there was the Palace. And
the Cabanas.
In between all of this.
The Cabanas, which was like self-catering and cheaper.
Right. And then eventually they had those chalets at the top as well.
Yeah.
But the $1 million golf, which was another one of their brain children. And, you know, Sun International, which was this incredible hotel group, which grew out of Sol's imagination too. This man, we are all the poorer for Sol Kerzner not being among us anymore. And I will say, without any fear of being countermanded by anyone else, that this guy was probably one of the greatest South Africans, and we should be very proud of him.
And you know, we're just only focusing on Sun City for now. He still didn't stop there. No. That, I think, is the fact that he kept going.
He went international. The last time I saw Sol was at a dinner in London at a friend of a mutual friend of mine and his, and to sit at the dinner table with him, and you know, he obviously was quite sick towards the end of his life now, but to sit with him and to sit at this table and hear Sol Kerzner just talking like a regular person, I had to stop myself from hero worshipping for a minute there. And the other time that I saw him was when we did the Nelson Mandela tribute in New York City, and he was in the audience, and I was on stage with, you know, Morgan Freeman, reading excerpts from Long Walk to Freedom. This is in 2014, January of that year. And there in front of me is Sol Kerzner. I thought, wow.
Incredible. He was buried at a small private funeral attended only by his family on Sunday. And he's now survived by his children, Andrew, Beverly, Brandon, and Chantel, and his 10 grandchildren.
Wow. Okay. Well, a full life.
How far did he make it along?
He was born in 1935.
Wow. Okay, so he had a good innings. I mean, I know it's
84.
It's held him a lot of consolation to the family, but I mean, you know, him and K. Rog also, we lost this week.
Yeah, Kenny Rogers. And, oh, man.
Sorry. Can you not call Kenny Rogers K. Rog like he's part of your gang?
The gambler, K-Rod, is the original gangster. He's OG.
Well, he is a gambler after all,
can
right?
Can you imagine Sol Kerzner and Kenny Rogers playing a game of Texas Hold'em in heaven? You got
K-Rod.
Know when to hold 'em.
Know when to build hotels. Sol K and K-Rodge playing gambling would be a hell of a thing. But I saw a meme, one of the rare humorous one of that 1 in 100 corona memes that's worth bloody sharing. Stop it, guys. That said, Kenny Rogers cashing out as the apocalypse starts is the most no end to fold a move ever.
I love that is fantastic. All right, Gordo, if you're keen, let's do this again a little bit later this week or early next week.
You know where I am. You know where to find me.
All right, yeah. That's
I'm not going anywhere.
That's what I'm telling everybody now. Like, I'm available. So thank you.
To mention for the listeners, why is Sia not – he's being that guy that doesn't put his video on. There's always that guy during the show. Why can't we see you now, Sia?
No, I don't want my connection to dip. That's why.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, dudes, I love you very much. Right, it's been great to be back. I'll see you as soon as you can.
All right.
Peace.
Good to talk to you. There's Gord Laws, and we are busy. We're busy this morning. We had Ben earlier on, and now we've got Rich Mulholland joining us. Rich is well known to people on cliffcentral.com. And by the way, we will be interviewing and talking to and having input from all the people who've been part of this story, finding out what they're doing to get through this coronavirus quarantine that everybody's in at the moment. But just so you know, Rich Mulholland is usually out in the world presenting coaching to CEOs, TED speakers. You can find him getting tattooed, riding motorbikes, playing games. He's written a number of books, but his latest book is called Boredom Slayer, A Speaker's Guide to Presenting Like a Pro. And Rich has made some time for us this morning because guess what? He's also stuck at home. Hello, Rich Mulholland. How the hell are you, sir? Oh, that sounds like farts.
Oh, no.
Where are you? Ah, there you are. No, Rich, we got terrible sound. I think turn off your video and let's just go to audio on this one. No, we're gonna.
Try, oh no!
Let's just try again because this is it's not working so well. Don't know what's happening. Maybe you've got a better connection than us, or we've got a better connection than you. Rich, can you hear us now?
I can hear you perfectly. Can you hear me okay?
That's marvelous. How are you, man?
I am fantastic, lads. Fantastic. Great to be back in the show.
Thank you.
It sounded like the corona had taken over your connection.
Yeah. You actually sounded like this.
These were actually the first words I spoke this morning out loud. So that's probably what actually happened. You're probably just hearing real me.
It's like an alien invasion. All right, so Rich, you're obviously riding this out at home. Are you in Joburg or Cape Town, and who are you with?
Cape Town, Jazz and the kids.
Okay, cool. So you guys are all together in the house. Are you all on each other's nerves yet, or are you still riding the wave of, ooh, this is exciting and novel?
I think it's somewhere in between, right? So, like, I've been working from home mostly since, you know, when I'm not traveling doing speaking, I work from Cape Town anyway, and Jazz and I have got a bit of a system of how we work. My son is a video gamer. He believes that he's been training for this day his whole life. Like, for him. Yes! It has come. So he's very happy. And, I think my daughter will struggle a little bit. She's still been running and seeing the, you know, some of the little other her friends in the estate and things. And so we'll see in a few days. But we speak a lot. We communicate a lot. And we've got quite a big board game collection behind us to keep us busy. So there we go.
Well, let me explain this to anyone who can't see us. Instead of a bookshelf behind him, Rich has a shelf which should be full of books, but indeed is full of board games. Every kind of board game you can imagine. So you guys do this anyway. In fact, your whole family has probably been training for this all their lives.
Yeah, in fact, one of the funny things is, though, I'm that crappy relative, Uncle Richard, that arrives at family gatherings and makes people play board games. But now all my nephews are like, Uncle Richard, dude, can you hook me up? I feel like a drunk dude.
So, Rich,
I've
seen some of the things you've been putting on social media about what people can do and what we should do with this time and some pretty solid advice, actually. We spoke to Gord earlier. He's got lots of video conferences. He's keeping himself busy. He's learning to play the bass again. Ben is busy doing some exercise to keep himself alive. What kinds of stuff are you doing from a routine point of view to stop you from going crazy?
Okay, so I'm massively routined anyway. So every morning I do a new day's resolution. I read passages from two specific books that I work my way through. So I've been doing those in detail. I train every day as well. That's a big part of my system. But actually, what's been easier about this is that I've never been busier. And it's the best. As soon as I finish my daily routine, I sit down, make my cup of coffee, I get my water and salt, and I sit down and I get ready for the day. I do intermittent fasting until 12, and I've just, like, I think systems help people in times like this. More so than you need, because you don't realize, people who didn't think they had a morning routine have a morning routine. Get up, get in the car, go to work, listen to the Cliff Central, do whatever you want to do. And now that system has been changed. So we have to create new normality. We have to find ways to say, okay, I'm going to make a system so this doesn't feel strange. You know, put on my slippers when I start working, take off my slippers when I finish working. You've got to give yourself cues that I'm in work or I'm not. And if you don't, you're going to go crazy.
So one of the things I saw you've launched is bed talks, not TED talks. This is where people can do TED talks from their bed.
Yeah, a mate of mine, Dave Rendell, he's an amazing speaker from the States. He did the first one and he challenged me to do one. And it's basically a short 3-minute talk, no video production value, nothing like this, and put it out there. And it's a great concept, and people are sharing some really nice things. But what actually struck me about it was quite incredible. And I realized this is broadly true, is this has given people who want to create content a massive opportunity, in that everybody is forgiving lower production value.
Yeah.
Everybody in the world, it used to be that, if you wanted to do a vlog or a video or something, you had to have a nice camera set up and everything had to be perfect. Now I can push record on the screen, and provided I have prepared the correct information. So I've written and I've structured what I want to say well, you'll do okay. Whereas, you know, you don't have to wait for that setup. Just don't add to the noise. Try add to the signal if you can. But for the most part, people are forgiving a lot. My clients are forgiving a lot in meetings. Like in general, people are just very, very happy that you're engaging. Massive opportunity.
Yeah, and you don't need a lot to make great stuff. If you've got imagination, you've got a couple of good ideas, and you are able to put those ideas into use, it's amazing how many millions of people you can reach now, thanks to technology. I mean, I don't know how they got through the Spanish flu or how they got through the Black Plague back in the 1300s, because then isolation truly meant you were stuck in a shack or a hovel and you had to just sit there and wait for it to pass and paint blood on your door like during the Passover, which is coming up, and hope that the infection didn't reach you and your family.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, totally, totally. Better times, worse times.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading about the Black Plague and what they used to do. You know, there's that Monty Python sketch where Eric Idle's pulling a cart and he says, "Bring out your dead, bring out your dead," and he rings the bell. Now, they actually used to do that. They used to have people who would go around and collect dead from various houses, and you just throw them on the cart and they'd take them off and burn the corpse, because of course you didn't get to bury them. They get thrown into massive group mortuary pits, and they just get lime thrown on them, and then they're either set on fire or just buried underground. They're actually still digging up in parts of London plague graves from those days. Yeah, and the people who lived in the houses, you know, if you had a slight cough, they pushed you out into the street, and you were off on your own. Even if you were five, it was nothing.
Yeah, crazy. Can you imagine? At least we're nicer to people nowadays. Like, there's so much to be thankful for. You know?
It's amazing. God damn it. All right, so how's Jazz doing? What's she up to? What's her routine?
This is her jam, right? Because now she's got people in her house. So she's got us all working. She's got chore lists and things like this. We've had to all come up with stuff. And everyone's just got to hunker down. So she's like and she's listening in here now. So I have to be very careful what I say. But she has become like a regimental sergeant major. She is putting us to work, doing things. But also Jazz is like made for this shit. So she likes to make sure we're well fed, make sure we're well stocked. And I every time Jazz is totally fine, and then I see there's a little bit of anxiety, and then she makes us something, and then we all eat, and then we're all happy again, and then she's happy again. And the best thing that's happened about this isolation is actually people panic when they're around places where they see that they could be panicking. So if she goes to the shops and she's like, "Oh my God, the shops are so busy," then she comes home and she'll be panicked for a little bit. Uh-huh. But once she's at home and like full cupboards and things are nice and stuff, like she's okay. So we're all okay.
Well, there are a couple of messages from people that I'd like to get to quickly while we're in the middle of this conversation with Rich. And if you want to talk to him, you can message us on 079-748-2090 and I'll put your questions to him. I just got the news that our lockdown here in Malaysia is being extended to the 14th. We're not even allowed to take a walk around the compound. That's from Jazzy in Malaysia. Sure. How's that? Wow. It's hectic. We think 21 days and then we'll be back to normal. But the world has changed, Rich. You read a lot. You pay a lot of attention to great speakers and thinkers from all over the world. How do you think the daily life of ordinary human beings is going to change from here on?
Okay, so from here on post, so are we talking like AD after disease? If we are, I think we can be better. And I'll tell you why, right? Because this is the great accelerant of our time. Everything has been accelerated. A lot of the progress that should have been made before has been forced now. You know, I just looked at my business and I wrote about this, but the more I think about it, the more I see it as true. I see that there's two viruses here. There's the actual virus, which hasn't actually affected me, mm-hmm. but then there's mimetic idea virus that has completely affected me. Because that shut down places, shut down businesses, and it's affected my business. You know, the screams of fire right now for me are worse than fire. Yeah. But what this idea virus has done is it's attacked the bits of my business that were the weakest, right? The crap bits of the company, the systems and shit like this that I should have fixed years ago. And it's really forced me to look at it and say, how did this thing even, how is this still here? How do we still do this? Why are we still selling this product? This is so stupid. And this has done it to all of our clients, all of our customers, and everyone's looking for a better way to work. And what it's doing, and it's up to people's mindsets. If they go into this thing and they say, oh, we've got to do alternatives too. So we're going to do a video meeting as an alternative to an actual meeting. Listen, video meeting is an upgrade to a normal meeting. Mm-hmm. You can sit there, calls are recorded. Right? So if you have a meeting with a client, your calls are recorded. If you want to brief five other people, you send them the video or the audio recording of the meeting. Life is easier. Everything is shorter. Nobody wants to spend an hour on a video meeting if they can get it done in 20 minutes. So that's what you do. So instead of having one-hour meeting with a client, we're scheduling 2 20-minute meetings one day apart or even in the same day, taking a brief in the morning, giving them feedback in the afternoon, and moving on the next day. Everything about this is making our businesses stronger and better. Right? We're showing people alternatives to work. If you're not excited about this, you've got to change your frame. Because being anxious about this isn't going to help you for shit. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, I love right? that.
So all speech. But it's true, because there's nothing you can do sitting at home. You're not going to outthink the virus. You're not going to out-meme or funny joke the virus. But what you can do is decide, well, how do I look at every single thing and say, how is this allowing me to do my job better? And that's the other thing I want to say to people is you actually have to believe that your job still matters, because it does. So let me tell you, before you think I'm all unicorn shitting rainbows, I mean, I've been trying to keep my people going. But yesterday we sat down with the team at Missing Link and we said, guys, we've just loaded salaries for the month. And we need you to know that right now this could be the last full salary we're able to pay you for a while.
Right.
Horrible conversation to give to people, right?
Yeah.
A horrible conversation to have to give to people. But what we've done is we've separated. We looked at our business and then we said, well, hold on a second. There's what we currently sell. Now, remember, we sell presentations to companies doing live events.
Yeah.
Not ideal.
No, it's out of business now.
But we said to our staff, we've got to separate what we do from what we can do. So I got everyone to open a Google Doc, or I opened a Google Doc, and everybody listed all the skills they had. Mm-hmm. And then what we did, we listed the problems our clients are facing. And what we're trying to do is marry the skills that our people have to the problems we're facing. I heard about a guy in the U.S. who had a private tourism business. So you jump into a car and you go around on a tour. And he had all these tour guides and they take you around San Francisco and the Bay Area. And of course, no one's doing tours now. So he sat there and he said, guys, we're all going to lose our jobs. And then he thought, well, hold on a second. Why? And now they're all delivery drivers. And sure, that tour guide didn't want to be a delivery driver, but he's very, very happy they're working now. So we have to set the skills we have. But actually, the call for me was that I spoke to the guys. Everybody understood. Nobody was shocked that a call like this was coming. But then I put into them a plan. So here's how we're going to beat it. Here's the methods we're going to do to get by it. But now every single person in my company is first and foremost a salesperson. And in fact, I even turned around, because we can sell things. So we sell online conferences now to companies. We take conferences online. I put out a post that I will hire on commission any single person's salespeople.
Wow.
Because why not? Why is everyone battening down the hatches? If you still have something to sell, there are salespeople with networks who don't have work.
Yeah.
Right? That real estate agent in Camps Bay who can't sell a house right now, well, those people that she talks to are CEOs of major companies. So unleash the new force. Again, if you're not looking for the opportunities, you're just not looking.
I agree with you, and I think that's so sensible. But for a lot of people, they're still stuck in that first stage of their life being disrupted, and it's separation anxiety, and it's a little bit of grief, in effect, because the world that they knew before is now dead. And they have to get past that. And Rich, for people like you, it's easy to get past that. But a lot of people have trouble snapping out of the woe is me, the world has changed and I'm a victim, this is so unfair. I know some people are going through justifiably shitty times at the moment. If you or I owned a restaurant or a coffee shop, we'd be down the toilet, right? And all your money and all your ideas and everything else that you'd put your life into this business would be gone. So that's hard to deal with. And not all businesses are able to be as nimble or agile as yours is. What would you say to those people to snap out of a spiral that's going to consume them? I mean, I'm not asking you to be a motivational speaker here, but you usually have some good ideas. No,
I want to be provocational. I want to provoke people. First of all, your brain needs to be busy. Right. And I kind of, you and Gordon mentioned this a little bit ago. He mentioned that person who said, you know, when you feel like you're working towards an exam, you're not cramming for it when you downtime. but you need to have an idea. I mean, if I had a restaurant, you'd realize, hey, I own a gathering place. What happens if I created spots of gathering? So we actually create small little gatherings, get-togethers for people to discuss stuff, and I put you into our Truth Coffee room for 30 minutes a day, and I max you up with other individuals and sit you at their coffee table. We have coffee chats, and you're going to pay us the cost of one cup of coffee to join our room. It's a small thing, but you may meet the person in your network that can level you up, and everybody's bringing ideas to help other people. Coffee shops and tea shops and restaurants are always about networking and bringing people together. If we understand that that's part of what we're doing, then how can we do that? If I owned a restaurant, I would be getting my chef to teach people, say, guys, hey, I can't make you the sandwich, but I'm running a webinar. It's going to cost you $5, and we'll teach you how to make the best cheese sandwich in the world.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that we're saying to our clients, stop comparing. You know, like one of our clients was doing a launch, and they were saying, hey, we wanted to try and have, you know, we don't have the time constraints. You don't have things, but maybe you can get the world's best mixologist to come in and tell people how to make the best cocktail at their house. Because that guy in New York City bar, who's normally you can't get close to for a martini, is now a person who's looking for something to do as well. So everybody's looking for something to do. This is a great, great time. But you just have to sit there and go to your teams and say, what are the ideas? Because that's what my guys came back with. I turned around and said, like, oh, and that's the other thing you have to realize if you're that person. If you think, but I'm just me, I don't have the answers here.
Mm.
Nobody has answers. I saw somebody shitting on the CEO of Sapphire the other day for asking his staff to take unpaid leave. Listen, real here, okay? If he gets his staff to take unpaid leave for 2 months, then maybe they'll have a job when this is all said and done. If he says, I'm going to keep on paying people indefinitely, they will go out of business very, very fast, and they will not have jobs in the future. But the second thing we need to understand before we crap on big business is there is no such thing as big business. There's other human beings just like you trying to figure out and do the best that they possibly can. And just like you, they jumped off the cliff and they're trying to build the parachutes on the way down. No business school teaches you this. Like, nobody thinks of this. And if you start remembering that there are no nameless, faceless companies, only other individuals trying to do the best they can with the same level of knowledge and chaos you have, maybe we'll all be a bit more patient.
I love that. That is such powerful stuff, because honestly, I see people crapping on politicians because they don't know what to do, including me. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, it's not enough that you're doing this, or it's too late, or it's too early, or you're not taking into consideration this, that, or the other. You're quite right. Everything's chaos at the moment. Nobody knows the answers. You see world leaders, people who've been in political office for 20 years that don't know their ass from their elbow at the moment, because this is unprecedented. But what it does mean is that nobody's in any better position than anyone else, which gives you an advantage, because the playing field is level now. Everybody gets a chance to start off from zero.
My assistant, and again, this is the assumptions. My assistant, we're on a call yesterday, we're asking everybody for ideas. And this is my assistant sitting in Singapore, she was on the call and she said, Rich, I know you've probably thought about this, but why don't you? And then she dropped a bomb. And it was a bomb that should have been so obvious that I sat there and I kind of looked at the other made faces of the people who'd been brainstorming. And I was like, how have we not thought about this?
Wow.
But Taryn had this idea, everybody's ideas. And again, because this has leveled the playing field. And let me tell you this, a lot of people are going to shine in this. This is when we're going to see the people in our organizations and the suppliers that we work with that really, really, really show up. You know, I just posted a clip this morning from Billy Madison. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah.
The Adam Sandler one.
Yeah, Adam Sandler one. So the clip was this. Adam Sandler phoned this guy, says, hey, is that like Mike? And the guy says, yes. He says, Mike from this elementary school. He says, yes. He says, listen, I'm sorry, I was a bit of a shit to you. And, you know, I was just dealing with my own stuff. And I'm really, really sorry. And that other guy was Steve Buscemi. And Steve Buscemi's sitting on the phone. He's like, what? Huh, thank you so much. And he says, yeah, you know, maybe we could grab a coffee sometime. It's all over. I feel like I'm a much better person now. And Buscemi's like, yeah, man, that'd be nice. And then he hangs up the phone and he turns around and he has a list of people he wants to kill. And he scratches them.
We missed you on that last sentence. Sorry, I didn't hear you. Say that again.
The name Billy Madison. And I think what people need to realize is right now, every single person, every business and every employer to some degree, and it's horrible, is having to write chill list. Yeah, because if we run out of money, something's got to give. Your job is to make sure that you're lower on the list than the other people. Make value to your suppliers that if they're cutting every other supplier, like we've got clients still dealing with missing link, and we are a presentation firm, but they're not cutting it because we're throwing value at them as hard as we can, and we're trying to reinvent and rethink and level them up. So we want them to keep our relationship. And also the other thing is we're not trying to make profit. Our business is on a zero profit. All we're trying to do is keep the lights on. And we've got ideas and things about if we do actually manage to make profit, how we can actually pay that forward as well. And obviously, yeah, we're just trying to get by. So this is where people will be made, reputations will be made or broken. If you're still sitting in the pity party stage of this thing, get off the ass, get off your ass, because this is, you're actually in a race and the other people are already running. You're not one of the people running. You need to start now. You need to find something to get excited.
Well, Rich, this is precisely why we get you on I think you get a lot of people fired up, and you've got a whole day. You've got 21 more of these starting from Friday. To come up with great ideas. You've got time on your hands. You've got technology that was unavailable to everyone before. As you say, things like production value aren't the most important thing anymore. Everyone is now an expert because the whole world's been leveled. So let's start from scratch and see whose reputation can be made here. Rich Mulholland, I love talking to you. Thanks so much, my man.
Guys, thanks, team. Have a great day.
All right, likewise, there we go.
Take it easy, Rich.
Thank you. Sia Sangweni, Mbulelo Tinta, thank you both very much for your contributions this morning. Mfundo, making
sure
that
you feel a little better now?
I do. I always feel better talking to Rich. He's a great guy. Mfundo, thank you for putting all the podcasts together and for making sure the studio is operating like a bomb. It was a much better show this morning. No technical glitches from my point of view. And thank you to everybody for your messages. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of them. This is an interesting point, and maybe it's someone who we should think about getting tomorrow. Kala says, please get someone with children on the show. You're delusional with your me time. Learn the guitar, siesta, blah, blah, blah. I have a 2- and 4-year-old who demand stimulation from 5 a.m. to 7 p.m. with a possible nap at 1:00. That's when we're expected to do most of the day's work, though. Yeah, Kala, I hear you. Maybe we need a parenting expert.
It will work out. Let's hear what Canthan is doing.
Yes, Canthan has children. He's with them all the time. So we'll check in tomorrow. And the Burning Platform, all the usual stuff. Lots of really interesting people joining us over the next few days. I promise you, by the time we're done, Rich and Gord and Ben and Bulelo and Sia and I are just the tip of the iceberg. We're only getting started. Lockdown is still 2 days away. It starts Friday morning for us, but we're already in practice so that we can be ready to throw all the best stuff at you. Make sure you keep it on cliffcentral.com. Download our podcasts. We've got lots of new interviews coming your way too. Stick around. Next is a brand new series, just to confirm what I've just told you, a brand new series around what exactly is going on in the world now from the point of view of your rights and the law and what you need to know. Gary Hertzberg from The Laws of Life is talking to Flaxman attorneys about how to get your business facing the threat of shutting down, the rights and obligations of employers and employees, navigating money issues like debt obligations and school fees, and the pandemic's impact on existing and future contracts. Well, the finest lawyers in the land join Gary Hertzberg for a 4-part series which starts today. Influx is on cliffcentral.com. It's on our app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find it under The Laws of Life or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. We will see you tomorrow, 6:00.
Cliffcentral.com.